This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So almost everybody I know has trouble sleeping. Are racing thoughts overtaking your night of sleep? Are you tired of not being able to sleep? Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? If so, it is time for you to try Ebb. If you've tried everything else, from pills to pillows, with little success, then try Ebb. Ebb is the first and only wearable, drug-free solution that targets the root cause of sleeplessness, the racing thoughts. It works like this. Ebb applies precise and continuous cooling to the forehead, which calms your mind, and it's clinically validated. 4 out of 5 users report falling asleep faster and improving overall sleep quality. Ebb allows people suffering from sleeplessness to drift more comfortably into a deeper, more restorative sleep. Ebb Sleep is designed to work with your natural sleep-wake rhythms to allow you to get into that deep sleep more quickly. I'm telling you, this is a real issue. Many people I know have trouble sleeping. You want to have the energy to do the things you love to do again, right? You need to get the sleep then in order to do them. Ebb's natural solution has no morning side effects and allows you to get back to your peak performance. Right now, you can try Ebb risk-free for 60 nights to confirm that it is the solution you have been looking for. Go to tryebb.com/Rome. That's tryebb.com/Rome. tryebb.com/Rome. Order today. Get the sleep that you need and you deserve.
It's part of the mystery of Aaron Hernandez. It's why I think people remain and will remain fascinated in this story. I can guarantee you, as you watch this documentary, the series, you will be taken in places and find stuff out that you just never saw coming, because nobody could ever figure Aaron Hernandez out.
And now, what's cracking, everybody? Welcome to the Jim Rome Podcast. I am especially pumped for episode 112. Got a good friend of the program joining the pod today to talk about his newest project that you can catch exclusively on Netflix. Now, I've said this before, I'll say it again right now. Pound for pound, Dan Wetzel is as good as anybody in the game. He can write the hell out of anything at all, and he has, but he's so much more than that. He is also now an executive producer on a Netflix documentary, which drops today, entitled Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez. In addition to spending years on this particular project and even longer on the Hernandez beat, Dan has also authored a series of kids' books called Epic Athletes, and he's the co-host of the Yahoo College Football Podcast. Once again, I've got tremendous respect for him and his ability, so much so that he makes a rare second appearance on this podcast. Yahoo's Dan Wetzel joins me for Ep 112 of the Jim Rome Podcast, which starts right now. All right, so Dan, you're an executive producer on a 3-part documentary series called Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez, which has already dropped on Netflix. It's streaming currently. Now, Dan, you and I have talked about this in the past. You've worked the Hernandez beat for years. So what was it like working on this particular project, and what was your goal going in?
Well, it was certainly interesting. The thing about the Hernandez story is, as you're covering on a daily basis as a reporter, he's just day in, day out. There's just so much material and so many themes and just narratives and angles to go on that you just can't fully explore that, you know, at those times, or it's just hard to do on a daily basis. The story is so fluid. It doesn't fit into a box. The characters don't fit into boxes. It's just a very complicated story. So it was a lot of fun to try to do it in a different medium, and particularly as a visual medium. And we're just basically trying to just explore the story, with, you know, journalistic value, and tell the full story of Aaron Hernandez, which includes, you know, not excusing his behavior, but explaining the situations he had, detailing the crimes, talking about the victims, bringing up all the different twists and turns that go into it. And it took a long time to do. Not an easy story to tell because it's not like a linear story. And again, it's complicated. I think anybody who watches it, there'll be times that there'll be, you know, they'll just see sides of the different characters in it that you don't expect, including Aaron himself.
You know, in trying to put this thing together, Dan, there were numerous interviews that were conducted with to get inside the mind of Hernandez. I'm curious, you know, and as a journalist, obviously you did your best and did a really good job of setting up these relationships, but how accessible were these folks and how willing were they to tell you what they knew and what they thought?
It just varied. You had some people that were, you know, very into it. Some obviously declined. We reached out to hundreds of people. There's people we interviewed that didn't make the final cut, but we tried to just open it up to everybody. You also had two lengthy trials which include scores of witnesses who sat under oath and testified. So even if you couldn't get, you know, maybe, you know, Robert Kraft wasn't going to sit for an interview with us, but he testified at a trial. So there's a lot there. And then we have the inclusion of, you know, along the way, we were able to get the Freedom of Information Act fulfilled to get many of the jailhouse calls that Aaron would make that are all recorded. So if you're ever talking to anyone from jail, just know you're being recorded. And those provided, I think, really some of the most compelling content, because you have Aaron talking to his fiance, his mother, his brother, his friends, his agent, all the different people in, you know, ways that you would never get if you just sat down and interviewed them. It's not guarded. Some of it is it's incredibly raw. You know, it's almost uncomfortable to listen to the things, and you really see over the course of time what this guy's going through and some of the issues he's hashing out with his family. So, and you also have Aaron's voice in there, which, you know, when we started the project, the ultimate goal was to sit down with Aaron Hernandez when his, you know, his trials were done. And then obviously after the 4 days after the second trial finished, he commits suicide. So but we do have his voice in there and probably more insight than we ever would have got if we actually just sat down with him.
You know, frankly, Dan, even in the trailer, to hear his voice, it's really eerie. It's really very, very eerie. And you mentioned the suicide, so I'm just going to jump ahead. And you mentioned that the goal was to talk to him. Do you think that you were going to get him to sit down? Was that likely? Was that going to happen?
You know, it's hard to say because he was going to appeal, you know, eventually maybe. We're certainly going to try. You just never know with you know, time ticks and, he spent a lot of time as a reporter trying to get interviews or staying on something. You're always optimistic, but, you know, certainly we weren't, you know, during while he's standing trial, he's obviously not going to sit down in that kind of an interview for this, but, you know, we're hopeful, but obviously that was a twist to the story that no one's expected and no one saw coming and is part of it too. The thing with Aaron is, you know, I think when you watch the series, in almost every facet of his life and almost every relationship he had, there's a second side that the people don't know or are not expecting. And I think the suicide is part of that, where even the people who, you know, knew him best, were most loyal to him. I mean, his attorneys at that point, after the second murder trial where he had been found not guilty, they've been with him every day for, you know, hours and hours and hours, for weeks on end, months, preparing for the trial and going through the trial, and they were absolutely stunned that he commits suicide. So there's just, in all cases, there's almost a second side to Aaron Hernandez in every relationship he's had.
So, Dan,
very,
what about
very
you?
Hard guy to peg down.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, what about you? What was the first thing that went through your mind when you heard that he took his own life?
I think I was like everyone else. I was just, you know, stunned that it happened at that moment. I did understand, you know, my theory on this, and obviously no one knows. I really felt that, and watching him and talking to a lot of people who are around him in different facets during the the second trial that he had gotten some life because he had something to do, and that was to he had a purpose. He was fighting, you know, fighting the case, and he was out of jail, out of prison at the time. He was able to not he wasn't free, but each day he would get to go to court and put on a suit and sit there, and he had some normalcy to his life. And the concept of spending, you know, he still was a convicted murderer, and he probably was never, there was really almost no chance he would ever win an appeal and then win a second trial. So he was basically facing what I thought he realized would be another 50 years in maximum security prison until he died of natural causes. And I think that's why he committed suicide. But so I you know, after a few moments, I guess I could say, yeah, that, you know, maybe that was it. I know there's a gazillion theories out there. You can find anybody, particularly jailhouse rumors or anybody to say anything. But I think just when you go in at 23, and that's when he was arrested. He was incarcerated at 23, and you're facing life. You're looking at, you know, 50, 60 years. That is an overwhelming and daunting thing. And so the idea that you would try to commit suicide at that point doesn't stun me. He certainly had thought it out and spent a lot of time planning it and planning on how to orchestrate it.
Sure. This docuseries is streaming right now on Netflix. And Dan, in no way am I looking to sensationalize any of this at all, but you mentioned there are a gazillion theories. You know, for instance, the speculation that he may have ended his own life due to the fear that the topic of his sexual orientation might come up. Do you personally think there's anything to that?
I don't on that. And again, this is just an educated opinion, as educated as I can be on it. I don't think that was it. There was a radio interview in Boston where he was sort of the rumors that he was bisexual were addressed publicly and you know, in a kind of a crude fashion. And that was something he struggled with his whole life, is dealing with his who he was and dealing with his sexuality and trying to, you know, in a very closeted, in a world that would favor staying closeted of football and all of that. And we do explore that in there. But simply put, the amount for him to commit suicide in prison, committing suicide in prison isn't easy. You know, he had to plan it out, and he had to get, I mean, he had to tie a bed sheet up over and over and over till it was strong enough to hold his frame. He had to acquire, enough soap to put on the floor so he couldn't stand. You know, he was put cardboard boxes to block the boxing to kind of block the door. He plotted out all these elaborate things. He wrote notes. It would have taken, I don't believe in 2 days he would have pulled all of that off and decided instantly to do it. So I think he was planning his suicide before that interview. But, you know, we don't know. He didn't provide an answer, and everybody's got a different theory. But that's his mind. I don't think I don't think that's what did it, whether it contributed or not, maybe. But I don't think that he wasn't already thinking.
And one more wild theory that was floating around is that he didn't actually take his own life. Do you buy that at all?
No, he definitely took his own life. That was certainly originally it was such a stunner that his family thought that, but they even gave up on that. I looked deeply into that. I mean, first off, you would need, I think it was something like, I counted up like 19 people to be in on it, including like the doctor at the local hospital who would, you know, basically risk everything to be in on a murder of a guy, you know, there's no way. Also his suicide notes, he wrote three suicide notes, one to his lawyer, one to his daughter, and one to his fiance, Shayana. And in each of those contained very personal. I mean, he had like a song that he and Shayana liked, like the lyrics of the song. So if someone was coming in to murder you and said, you know, I need you to write a suicide, somehow under duress, you write a suicide note, you're not going to write three notes with this much personal information. There's just nothing to it. So, and first you would need multiple people. I mean, this is a 6'4", 240 pound 27-year-old guy who could have been playing in the NFL. I mean, just so much to it. So he committed suicide, 100%. And again, it's just part of the mystery of Aaron Hernandez. It's why I think people remain and will remain fascinated in this story. I can guarantee you, as you watch this documentary, the series, you will be taken in places and find stuff out that you just never saw coming, because nobody could ever figure Aaron Hernandez out.
I'm going to follow you up on that in 1 minute. The docuseries is streaming right now on Netflix. Dan Wetzel joining us. Dan, this notion that he was 6'4", 240, and really a pretty scary guy. Like, prison, obviously, is the most terrifying thing imaginable for pretty much everybody in the world. What was life like on the inside for Aaron Hernandez?
So there were two different experiences. When he was in the county jail, one of the more chilling and remarkable parts was he got into county jail and he's awaiting trial. So the county jail is different than a maximum security prison. You'll have people in there, you know, doing 3 months for drug possession, or, you know, people overnight on a DUI. It's just a different place. Even if they put you in the more hardcore area. What they expected at the jail was they put him on suicide watch. They expected anybody who's dealing with the kind of pressure and charges he's dealing with, that you're up for life, they usually break down. They're crying. They're banging the door. They're screaming. They shouldn't be there. It's a very difficult early adjustment. The jail officials were stunned when Aaron just moved in, no problem. Just no problem. There's literally, we actually have audio of him just talking to his mother about how much he actually thinks his cell is cozy. And I think there was, at the time before the Odin Lloyd murder that he was arrested for, he was under incredible pressure because he thought he was going to get murdered himself by his former friend Alexander Bradley, who blamed him, who said either Aaron shot him in the head, shot Bradley in the head, Bradley survived, or at least was responsible for the shooting. And he was basically hunting Aaron Hernandez down. So I think there was almost a relief. So at the county jail, he did fine. When he had to go to the maximum security prison up in Shirley, Massachusetts, that was a different ball game. Now you had prison gangs, you had a much more hardcore environment, you had other murderers, you had a lot of people who, yeah, Aaron Hernandez is a big guy, you might want him on your side, you're either recruiting him, but there's also a lot of people who might want to take a shot at him. So there was a lot of disciplinary problems there and different things. It was a much, much more violent and difficult place to live at the Shirley Max than it was at the county jail.
All right, so as you mentioned, there are a lot of twists and turns that people who see this may not believe, may not know about, that there's a second side to a lot of things here. Like, what sorts of new information, perhaps, does the docuseries provide about Hernandez, and what are the things maybe you were looking to dispel?
Well, you know, we were very focused on adhering to, you know, the facts and journalistically sound reporting and storytelling, and trying to get off sides and not going with, you know, I think, like I said earlier, you can get rumors about anything you want, especially now with Aaron Hernandez, especially after his death. What shakes out, what's real, what's provable, because that story alone is enough. And so there are twists and there are things that people aren't expecting. But it's not necessarily like, oh, we've got this wild claim or there's this, you know, crazy rumor. It's not a shock value thing. It's more, I can't believe that it went in that direction or that's a deal. I mean, obviously you have a lot of stuff. I think probably the most powerful stuff that very few people have heard are the many jailhouse conversations, because I think it makes the docuseries, because you hear Aaron in his own voice. And again, we have, you know, him discussing his childhood with his mother on a jailhouse call is a you know, incredibly intense experience that there'd be no other way to replicate other than having those phone calls. So I think you get a lot of that type of stuff.
right? So without giving that away, I won't say exactly what he said to her, but it is really powerful and it's intense. Like, if we were to walk this whole thing back, and the obvious question, Dan, how did somebody like that, somebody who had so much, get so caught up? I mean, it's the broadest question imaginable, but how did this guy go from being an NFL star who had just signed a $40 million contract to a convicted killer? How did that happen?
You know, we don't have an answer. We don't, and I think the only honest thing to do is to not provide one because nobody knows. I think this is a perfect cocktail that created this storm. We go through a lot of different things, and again, it's not excusing, it's explaining. Aaron Hernandez made his own decisions. And Aaron Hernandez ruined a lot of lives, ended lives, terribly affected so many different people. He's no hero or anything like that. But you look at so many different things that happened, whether it was, abuse as a child, his father passing away in high school and really leaving him rudderless, a chaotic home life after that, decision to go to University of Florida, not the University of Connecticut, where he had a better support system. Becoming friends with Alexander Bradley, drug abuse, an affection for guns, and sort of a gangster lifestyle that made no sense. He didn't grow up in a bad, he grew up in a two-parent home. It wasn't perfect, but, you know, with a yard and a basketball hoop in the driveway and a fence around, you know, a nice white fence and in Bristol, Connecticut. He wasn't, you know, this isn't a guy who had to escape anything. He chose, after making it to the NBA to hang out, NFL to hang out with gangsters like Alexander Bradley and to surround himself with guns and things like that. And so you have all of that and all the different things that ascended. Is it CTE? Is it, you know, the pressure and the pain of not being able to be who you are in terms of your sexuality? Is it all the different things? Is there one of those things that did it? Or is it all of them? It's impossible to know. And so I just kind of reject anyone who's like, well, it was this. How do you know? Maybe it was just all of it. But whatever it was, we got a story that you just simply have never seen or heard before. You have a guy who, again, like you said, has a $40 million contract for outward appearances, has it all. He's the big mansion. He catches a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl from Tom Brady. He's got all the money. His fiance loves him, devoted. He's got this beautiful daughter, and yet he's seeking other things. He's out at night being involved in shootings and murders and just seeking all the other things that are on him that normally you would say, why are you doing that? Move on from that. Or don't. It wasn't even move on. Why are you trying to live that life? So there's just so many different things that played into it. When you think of, you know, pro sports crime, you know, the most famous one, at least of this generation, is OJ. And that's obviously a sensational story, an incredible story. But OJ was a retired football player, and OJ was involved in what is unfortunately fairly common, which is spousal abuse and domestic violence. And so, you know, when a young woman is murdered, the number one suspect is either her husband or ex-husband. This is something totally different. I mean, Aaron was involved in, you know, potentially up to 7 people getting shot and 3 murdered. And I mean, even if he was found not guilty of the double homicide, but he was there and he ended up stashing the murder car. So, I mean, he was at least at the very best, he was present and then covered up a double homicide and then played an entire season in the NFL. Or he pulled the trigger and killed the 2 guys and then played an entire season. We've never seen anything like that. And so there isn't just a single thing. None of this story fits in the box the right way. And I think that's what makes it so fascinating. So I think people will come away with it in different ways and say, I think it's this, I think it's that. And honestly, Aaron left everybody a mystery.
Dan, it was such a remarkable response you just shared. It's impossible to determine what's the most amazing thing about this whole thing. I mean, the whole thing just, I'm incredulous still to this day, but that point you just made that it's not like O.J. Simpson. We're talking about an athlete in his prime who went back to work and would go into the locker room. Like his Patriot teammate. Like, I don't even know how you live with something like that, but then we're talking about a different guy and who knows what he was dealing with. You're trying to get inside the mind of Aaron Hernandez. But what did his Patriot teammates think of him generally?
And just to that point, O.J. wasn't out on a drive-by shooting.
Right.
O.J. wasn't out, like, plotting a murder in a field. Like, O.J. was accused of a rage killing, right, in his backyard when he discovered his ex-wife with, a guy bringing some glasses to her, and he went crazy. That's just a very different crime. Obviously, at the end, the murder is a murder, but it's a different deal than, hey, I'm going to ambush these guys and just shoot up a bunch of guys I barely know because I'm mad at them maybe, or this guy's mad at them. Patriots teammates, the one thing people say, how do the Patriots not know? Well, they knew there was trouble and they knew stuff, but Aaron was deceptive. He wasn't honest with anybody in his life. People didn't know the other side of him. He did not hang out with a lot of the Patriots. He hung out with friends who weren't football players. And so, it's not like he and Tom Brady were hanging out. Aaron Hernandez was showing up every single day ready to work. He was a great football player. And he was never missing a meeting. He was always in shape. He was working out. The Patriots loved him. They don't just give out a $40 million contract in New England if they don't believe in you. There's no – people like, well, Belichick and Kraft must have known he had this sideline. They would never have given – it just is a – not forget, like, the morals of it. This is a practical business matter. They're not – they don't tie themselves to anybody that could come back and hurt them or not work. So in terms of inside the building, Aaron was great. And the Patriots, this is discussed in the thing, we talked to a number of former Patriots, like – in many ways, the Patriots are a perfect place for a guy like Aaron because it's all business. And Aaron even complains in one of the calls, like, they try to take the fun out of it. Belichick, he kind of hates Belichick but loves Belichick. So a lot of the players were shocked, but I think just as stunned as everybody else. I mean, you have just, his own fiance doesn't know he has a side apartment. His own fiance doesn't know that he, what his sexuality is. She's known him since high school. Everything in his life is a secret to some other part of his life. So it's a very unusual case. And the Patriots certainly, you'll see their situation in the docuseries, but I think it's completely unfair to, if, and I know you weren't suggesting this, but for anyone to just be like, oh yeah, Belichick knew this guy was probably killing people, but he didn't care. I mean, you got to be fair in these things. And I think sometimes with Hernandez, some of the reporting or the stories just isn't fair to everybody involved. This is a master manipulator. He manipulated everybody.
I was going to say, Dan, I think we can be critical of Belichick for any number of things. And I think that he, like any other coach, will overlook a number of things for talent. I don't think that he would overlook this guy going around killing people. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, do not make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. I love it. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and it's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. Old Trapper is also a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Who wants a dried, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. That's who. Be like eating a shoe. Old Trapper is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors, like Old Fashioned, which is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who like to shake things up a bit. Next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for it in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Also, look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? What about Odin Lloyd, Dan? Like, why did he kill Odin Lloyd?
We don't know. There's never been a motive on why he killed Odin Lloyd. Odin Lloyd was, by all accounts, his friend. Odin Lloyd was dating a woman, Shania Jenkins, who was attending law school up in Boston. She's the sister of Shayana Jenkins, who was Aaron Hernandez's fiance. So they hung out, the sisters hung out together. And Odin and Aaron were kind of, you know, like you would with a potential future brother-in-law or something. You're kind of forced into a deal, and they end up becoming friends. Odin was very gregarious guy. He talked to his friends. They just loved him. He had a great spirit about him. And they would just hang out in the basement, and he played semi-pro football. They had a lot in common. You know, you talk to people. We talked to people in the docuseries, you know, 2 weeks before, everyone's shooting pool and hanging out. It's like 3 nights before they go out to a club and hang out. And then all of a sudden, Odin Lloyd ends up murdered. What I would say at that time is it really goes back to Alexander Bradley, this drug and gun dealer that Aaron had befriended and become his friend. And he really thought at that time Alexander Bradley was going to kill him and was hunting him to kill him, which is why he had these other guys, Carlos Ortiz and Ernest Wallace, these kind of his bodyguards. He bought a $90,000 armored car at one point. He had all these weapons. He had this separate apartment to kind of hide out in and store his weapons. He thought he was going to, he was getting hunted to be killed. And so Aaron was consuming an incredible amount of drugs at that time, partying, almost like he knew he thought he was going to die. And I'm not sure he had his mind in the right place, or he grew suspicions somehow of Odin. We don't know, but the Odin Lloyd murder has never made any sense. None of the murders ever made any sense. There's never been a motive on any of them. And it's frustrated, you know. It's one thing for us to think the prosecutors spent, you know, years trying to figure out what the motives were, and they never could on these things. Everybody he attacked, ever alleged to attack, were unarmed, didn't know it was coming, had no power over them, and it just occurred. And so it never made, you know, if he's mad at a guy or mad at Odin, or, I mean, he could punch him, he could fight him, there's Aaron Hernandez, but instead, There was guns involved and things like that. So none of that has ever made any sense, and I'm guessing never will.
So, Dan, this docuseries was like 3 years in the works. I mean, it took like 3 years, right, to get this thing done. You were on that beat long before that.
Five.
And yet there's still so many unanswered questions. Like, if that sit-down with Aaron Hernandez as part of this docuseries ever did happen, and you were the one to conduct it, like, what would you ask him? What do you need to know, or what would you want to know from him?
The word why would come out like 100 times. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it has to be for a docuseries. I think if it's he's sitting down with his fiance or any of his, you know, why did this have to happen? And at this point, we don't know. Maybe someday we will. Maybe there's, you know, more jailhouse calls or there's more information, but the why remains the mystery here, because it so much of what he did didn't make sense. But again, if you go through all of the things he was going through, I'm not sure anything really made sense to him at that stage. But at 23 years old, you know, he only played 3 years in the NFL. He only played 3 years at Florida. That's it. Played 3 years. Played 9 years of football. Three in high school, three in college, three in the pros. That's it. That's his whole career. And he was incarcerated at 23 years old. He was in the NFL at 21, bro.
That's all amazing to me. I mean, 3 years in the NFL, that's hard to believe. If you didn't know that, that'd be a really hard thing to imagine. Before you go, what about that issue of CTE? Because it was found that he had a severe case of CTE when his brain was studied posthumously. How do you view those findings? Like, in your opinion, is there a direct correlation between CTE and decision-making and violent behavior?
Well, I think it probably played a role. I say in there, I don't think it's fair to blame this on football because, you know, there are 10,000 former NFL players, and they're not acting this way currently. But clearly he had significant CTE problems. Now they said, well, at 27, he had the worst case you've ever seen. Well, that's because most times 27, they're alive. So we don't really know, but clearly he had it. And you look at the symptoms of CTE, I think one of the prosecutors said this, because I thought this was a cop out and a gimmick. And then you go, oh, it's about rash behavior and violence and all this different stuff. So, I think so many different things played a role. We went through his career, pretty much every reception, and you watch every play. And there are some colossal hits he took. He was knocked out cold in a high school game. I think when you watch, there's one hit that is particularly jarring to see, not only be the violence of it and the reaction of Jim Nance and the broadcast of the hit, but it comes from Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis drills Aaron Hernandez head to head. And you just think about these two guys and this game and that hit. And you're just like, man, there is, you know, we don't know what's going on, you know, so I can't rule anything out. I can hardly rule anything in, or exclude anything in. You know, it's just such a complicated story. But we did our best to try to tell it in the, you know, the best manner we possibly could.
All right. So finally, it's streaming right now on Netflix. It is a 3-part docuseries. You spent the better part of 5 years working on this as an EP and lending your journalistic abilities to it, Dan. So what was it like for you to sit down and watch this thing after all that work?
Well, you watch it so many times because you're editing it or you're involved in the editing process. It's kind of hard because I need to give it a couple weeks and then kind of just watch it on TV. But the reaction's been huge and overwhelming off of just the first day. So I think it's like anything. If you went back on old shows, you say, I should have said this or I should have asked this question. You know, you know what's not in it or what could have been in it. So it's a little hard for me to kind of to watch it. But so far the reaction's been something else. I think we just, I don't know. You just work, you know, you just work so hard on it. And with Kevin Armstrong, who used to be with the New York Daily News, who worked with me on it, and Gino McDermott from Blackfin, who directed it. All the people at Rock, Paper, Scissors, all of us just trying so hard to get it right and get it fair. I think that's almost become more of a focus than what's it actually look like at the end.
All right, so I'm going to let you go after this. Like, what's that like? Like, you work, obviously, in your career as an author, as a columnist, as somebody that does podcasts. You're going to work alone, or you might collaborate with somebody else. What was it like for you to work with so many others and be a part of such a huge project?
Well, you know, as a writer, you tend to be able to control every last comma. So you give up a lot of that, but you also are surrounded by such exceptional talent. And Gino McDermott, our director, just believed in this project so much. I mean, we got turned down by a lot of everywhere originally, and he funded a documentary movie on this, which we got into the New York City Doc Festival. And then that led to Netflix coming back and deciding to get involved and add their immense talent and resources to it, and turn it into a 3-part doc. So, you lose control, but you had great teammates. So it's a pretty good deal, on that. You don't have to do it all. I don't know how to make, I don't have a camera, right? I don't know how to make a movie,
right.
Cut anything. I can just, you know, watch it over and over and over and say, hey, I think this is a little, we could do this. Or I remember this piece, bit of testimony, that quote might be better. And then, you know, you see what comes out and see how people like it.
Check it out. It's a 3-part documentary series. It's called Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez. It is already live and up on Netflix. Dan, I appreciate the time very, very much. I respect your time. And it's great to have you back on this podcast. Thank you so much.
Always appreciate the support, Jim. Take care, man.
Once again, for the record, nobody more dialed in and buttoned up than my guy, Dan Wetzel. Huge thanks to him for making his second appearance on the podcast. I cannot encourage you enough to follow this guy and to check out his work. And make sure you check out that 3-part docuseries, which premieres on Netflix tonight, Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez. It's going to stream on Netflix. And make sure, while you're here, to do the big 3 in podcast support. Rate, review, and subscribe. Appreciate that very much. Thank you. We're back next week with Game Bread. the UFC's, BMF, and Miami's very own Jorge Masvidal. It's going to be tremendous, especially since he can get as loose and uncensored as he wants. Can't wait for that. Make sure you look for it on Wednesday. Until then, appreciate you listening and supporting this here side hustle. I will catch you next week. Until then, here are your voicemails.
First new message.
Jim, what's up? Blaze from Idaho calling. I'm just rearranging my 110-inch 1080 projector. And I was just thinking as I was moving the piece of furniture, how cool.
Message deleted. Next message.
Hi, Jim. Bella B in Calgary. I played every pick James Kelly told us to pick. I lost my money, but that's okay because my Calgary Flames are in first place and I don't mind losing that Canadian money. Bye.
Message saved. Next message.
Hey, Jim, what's up? This is David from Buffalo. I'm calling in here to talk about Tobin from Chapel Hill calling in, thinking that he's part of this North Carolina mafia or whatever he called himself. And this guy calls in so arrogantly like he's like the greatest caller to sports talk radio. Tobin from Chapel Hill is a nothing, Jim. Couldn't even call in with a take on the Tar Heels. Webb Simpson, who's playing some unboiled golf. The Carolina Hurricanes are relevant again. And most of all, Matt Rhule just got hired to be the Panthers head coach. I mean, Tobin, way to call into a nationally syndicated sports talk show and have zero sports takes on a day where there's a zillion things to talk about. Keep it to sports, clones. I'm out.
Message saved. Next message.
Romy, Justin in Melbourne. Who the hell would ever want to get rid of Seth Greenberg? That guy has more fire than any coach out there, man. That's their loss. I love the conversation you had with him about his wife, too. Karen, you know, I'm no Columbo, dude, but is she actually Mona in Knoxville?
Message deleted. Next message.
Ben Smack, what's up? This is Cabrera from the Bay. Y'all thought the Vikings was going to come in and get the job done. Really? Really? Big head. Big head. Really? Wrong. Don't bring that idiot back in again. Baltimore, tell me how my ass tastes. Wrong. Can we get the Rat family back? Because Toby from Houston said, crank, 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 drunk bus, drunk bus.
Message deleted. Next message.
Saglito, I'm chomping at the bit, man. Lo and behold, the SEC not only landed Lane staying at Raising Cane's Kiffin, but they also doubled that down with Pirate, Frequence, Long John Silver's Mike Leach. Man, that Egg Bowl is going to be epic. Oh, man, good times in the SEC to come, Romy. Outro.
Message saved. You have no more messages.
No one has allegedly murdered two people and then played an entire season as a professional athlete.
I can't wait to be free.
I'm Aaron Hernandez from Bristol, Connecticut. I play at Bristol Central High School.
Aaron Hernandez was a different level of athlete.
He was kind.
He wasn't someone who picked on other kids.
He's one of the best players in America. Get him the ball.
The Patriots reward him with a $40 million contract.
Aaron Hernandez was a ticking time bomb.
The why is the story here.
He was out to prove something, like a tough guy all the time.
He had a second residence.
The Flophouse. He had trouble with drugs, with guns.
Aaron was absolutely operating on the edge.
New England Patriot Aaron Hernandez was arrested this morning at his residence.
Aaron was accused of murdering Odin Lloyd, his future brother-in-law.
How can an individual who has everything get involved in something like this?
I was the happiest little kid in the world, and you fucked me up.
I ain't living with that.
You did! I had nobody. What do you think I was gonna do? Become a perfect angel?
Aaron was extremely terrified of his father.
Violent outbursts were not uncommon in the Hernandez home.
Aaron had a history of concussion-related injuries.
At the drop of a hat, he became angry and violent.
You've had everything and threw it all away.
We had to hide what we were. He was in such denial.
Aaron had reason to fear for his own life.
I wanted revenge.
None of it makes sense.
The story is not just the Aaron Hernandez story. A lot of lives affected by this guy.
Had to be shocked for all your teammates.
Next question.
I'm gonna explode.